Darkwraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Autumn Semester 2014. Lecture 17, delivered on October 22, 2014. The title of this lecture is Net Present Value and Internal Rate of Return.
Today, Net Present Value and Internal Rate of Return. In the last lecture, you saw a way to analyze whether projects are go or no-go using marginal cost of capital. This approach is actually somewhat popular in some companies. And that problem that you saw was, as I had mentioned, a modification of a real problem that was from the 1990s, or late 1990s. And you will have one of these on the second exam, so know how to do it, and know that that one will also be a modification of a real-world problem. Marginal cost of capital analysis is a way to say, do we do this project, or do we say, no, we're not going to do that project? But there are other ways that are out there, and as I said a little bit, and I'll say this again, in the real world, there's sort of like a mishmash of ways. Some companies do it right by the book, what they learn, what we do in college, in the class like this, in your MBA program, marginal cost of capital analysis, net present value analysis, internal rate of return analysis. But some companies, there's just a tradition of doing it some other way. And you sort of have to figure out what the house rules are, and you follow them. And you don't say, well, our professor said that you shouldn't use that because that's stupid. Don't do that. Just sort of, oh, God, they're doing this. A couple of these methods are brought up in the book, and I don't know why they even bother, because these are bad ways to analyze projects. But I do understand that there are places where this is still done. A couple of months ago, I was at a dinner, and I heard down the table someone used the word payback period. It's a completely wrong method, but I'm not sure who was saying it, but it was someone in their finance department. They're using payback. Here's payback period. Let me, and I'll show it to you, but for God's sake, unless you have to do it this way, don't. Suppose that you have a project. Here's your timeline of your cash flows in a project. And here, again, I'm just showing you this because it's not a good method. You shouldn't be using it, but it's out there. Suppose that you had a project that cost, you're going to spend $2 million. Well, let's just say $2,000. Let's make the numbers a little simple. Now, the first year, the project's going to pull in $500. The second year, $800. And then the third year, it's going to pull in, let's say, $600, and then it's going to tail off to $200. And the last year, there you make $50, and there's a salvage value. You can sell the equipment for, let's say, $75. Always watch for that salvage value, because what you do with that is you just put it on the last cash flow. In other words, when a project is over, what you do is you look, can I get some money for this used equipment? And a lot of cases, yeah, there is some. You can sell it to some other company that needs some old equipment. Matter of fact, with the printer that I purchased 3 years ago, I projected a 4-year lifespan with a salvage value on it that I could probably, it cost me about $2,500, with a salvage value probably of about $400. So that becomes part of the last year's cash flow. So what you would do with that is you would add that here, and you would make that $125 on last year. Just know that I'll do that. You see, the salvage value of this project is, and you just add that to last year's cash flow. Oh, anyway, let me show you what's going on with the payback period. They would say, all right, the first year, your cumulative is 500. The second year, your cumulative is 1,300. Your third year, your cumulative is 1,900. Your fourth year, your cumulative is 2,100. The payback method says you just set a rule. No project should pay back in more than 4 years. They did pull a number out of their ass. And that's literally how they do it. And there's some house rule. Someone's decided no project should take more than 3 years to pay itself, to pay off. So in other words, this project would have, and you could do some fancy little arithmetic and algebra, but this project has a life of almost, has a payback period, almost 4 year payback. So by this payback method, if this, say this company had a payback rule of 3 years, no more, a project's got to pay itself off, then this project would be rejected. It's that simple. It's old. I mean, this is, you will read company literature back from many decades ago. This was the way it was done, unless you had people with college and all of that. A lot of companies just use this rule. Here's the flaw in the rule, if you don't notice it, is that it doesn't take into account the time value of money. You're spending that $2,000 right now. Those positive cash flows are coming down the road. They're not worth that as now money. So the payback method just completely ignores the fact that that money out there isn't worth nearly as much now when you're spending the $2,000 as it is when it's coming into you down the road. That's the big flaw in the payback method. The other flaw in the payback method, which is also a flaw in what I'm going to show you here in a little while, is where do you get your three-year rule? Did you wake up in the middle of the night some night and, you know, the Lord was telling you, 3 years, no more? Justify it. And there's really no good justification for picking one number of years over another number of years. Unless, in some cases, suppose that you're a business person and you're going to die in 3 years. You've been told you have 3 years to live. You'd probably look at payback periods of 2 years then, right? But other than that, shift leader, really? Cool. She's got a tag that says shift leader. Okay, take it off the table, but know that you might work for a company where they have payback. They use payback method. Other rules. There are other rules that you can run into in companies that are just from a scientific, from an analytical perspective, they just don't hold water. You'll run into them. The one that's still seems to be out there, especially with startup companies, is this idea, we don't do any math. We just know when something is a good idea. Said many, many bankrupt companies all over the country, all through history. Now, whether or not your gut is right or wrong is sort of irrelevant. If you go back and you look at the analysis by the technicals, the successful ones met the technicals. Maybe there was some internal sense. These people had a calculator in them. They were doing net present values and all that. Probably not. But, it's out there. I just feel like I'm going to spend this money. We're going to do this. And come hell or high water, we'll see what happens. That's sort of like the blind trout approach to running upstream. Welcome to the area of the grizzly bears who are going to eat you when you do it that way. But anyway, the MCC approach, technically, great approach. Kind of a pain in the butt to do, though. Although, as I mentioned, there are Excel spreadsheets that do this for you. You just push in the numbers. Remember when I was writing that column of numbers? You just push the numbers in, and it'll prompt you, and then you say go, and it'll do the little graph and the charts and all that kind of stuff. good method, but it's not the one that's actually the most popular. The two that are the most popular are called the net present value approach and the internal rate of return approach to capital budgeting decision making. In other words, we have to decide whether we're going to spend money on a project, the MC, or on a group of projects. The MCC approach is nice, but again, it's not the one that's the most popular. NPV analysis is a heavy duty, great way to do it. It has some suspicions and flaws in it, and I'll talk about those, but it's the one that's widely accepted. The internal rate of return approach is highly, highly valued, although it has a logical flaw and a mathematical problem in it, and I'll talk about that. Yeah, go ahead. Internal rate of return. And I'll be writing it out here in a minute. Just say NPV and IRR for now. It makes you sound cooler when you're at the finance singles bar. Saying internal rate of return shows that you really are new to the financial analysis singles bar scene.
I agree.
I know. It's just like, you know, do you want to breed or not? Now, straight up, there's a new way out there. It's being used by young, hotshot, fast-growing companies. It's also being used by some of the biggest, heaviest of the companies in the world. It's beyond either of these, and it's the implications of it are really creepy if you think too much about what's going on. I teach it in the last course in finance that students have to take before they graduate with a degree in finance. I show it to them. I say, you probably won't see it where you work, but you might if you're in certain companies. It essentially treats projects as derivatives, and then you price them using this incredibly complicated mathematics that's used to price derivatives. And it has some really, really dark implications. But Boeing used it. Some of the big heavies have been using it for more than a few years, for a number of years now. Intel, Google have used it. Other hotshot young companies, high-tech companies, some manufacturing giants are now using it. And it's beyond either of these. Fortunately, it's not very common, so I don't even have to talk too much about it here. But know that there is a new way out there to deal with projects. Happily, I don't have to do that with you guys because it would really turn your minds what's going on behind the scenes with that approach. NPV. Let's take a project. Okay, and I'll do a simple project, and I've put some numbers down on a calculator here. Let's say that you have a project. You are considering a project that will have an initial cost of $4,500. And will provide expected future cash flows of, let you catch up for a second while I catch up with the numbers that I put in, $800 the first year. $1,200 the second year, watch my numbers here, $1,000 in years 3 and 4, and $500 in the terminal fifth year. With a salvage value of $300.
Shut up, get off me.
If you discount future expected cash flows from projects of this risk class, at 6.5%, should you accept or reject this project? Get all that down. And before we attack, make sure your calculator's out. Because if you do this, you can do this by hand, or with tables, or with mathematical formula, or you can open up your calculator and there is an app that will do all of the heavy lifting for you on your TI. But before you do that, there's one small issue in here. Where do I get that 6.5% discount rate? There are a couple of different ways you can do it. One way is you can just pull it out of thin air. Another way is to ask yourself, okay, let me look at projects like this one around the industry. What are they using for their discount rate? Well, you might not be able to find that out. So what we'd like to do, and this is not always easy, and it's not always available. This project does this one thing. So we try to find a company that does just that one thing. And then we look at its beta, and we apply the cap M and find the discount rate. Again, let me explain that again. What we'll do is we'll consider, okay, what is this project? Is there a company that is pretty much just doing this and not other things? And then if we can find a company like that, we look at its beta. And then we use the capital asset pricing model, you know, the case of F plus beta times case of M minus case of F, to find the discount rate. And that's where we would get a number. There are even services that will give you types of projects, and they will give you the betas so that you can crank them out and figure out. A number of services will, not a number, but if you know where to look, I can say, all right, manufacturing car seats for infants. It's one of the things that we do, and we're considering getting into that business. So what we would do is look for go into these lists that are provided by some financial information services and say, all right, we want a company, the beta of a company that does nothing but produce infant car seats. It comes up, okay, here are four. Here's the average beta of these companies. We could use the average. Here's the worst beta. Here's the best beta, or something like that. So we can do it, but sometimes it's kind of hard, especially if you've got something you think really nothing like this has ever been done before, because then you're kind of on your own. Then you start having to do some other things that we do. One thing would be, okay, this project is sort of like these that have come before, but it's a lot different. Okay, that means that there's more risk in this one. We can just throw on a risk factor if we want to. That's kind of the way it's done, despite, you know, we do everything by mathematical formula. Sometimes you'll say, okay, we're fielding a new kind of cell phone. This cell phone, we can look at the betas of production of cell phones, use that as our starting point. But this is something new, and it's riskier. We're not sure people are going to want to embrace this. Okay, we use the beta of, let's say, 1.4 for the typical cell phone manufacturing company. Got a discount rate from CAPM of, let's say, 12%. Yeah, there's a lot more risk in this. Okay, what? How much? 4%. Okay, 16%. Let's go with that. 18%. Sometimes you just kind of have to throw that pad on your own. I was just mentioning a new generation of cell phones will be coming out in a couple of years. And whether they're adopted or not, that's a risk. So if I were discounting future expected cash flows from doing this project, I'd start with betas of current cell phone manufacturers and figure out what the, by CAPM, what the discount rate is. And then I'd probably say, let's throw some extra on that because, boy, this one is speculative. Are people going to embrace this like they do current generations of cell phones? This is an awful lot different. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. A couple of new technologies, in case you're wondering. Imagine a cell phone that's nothing but a bar, two pieces. You slide it out like that. There's your screen. Collapse it back like that. It's coming. But will people adopt it? That's a risk. That's a risk we don't really grasp, whether people will want to do it that way or if they'll be so stuck on these giant dinner plates that we have now for phones that they'll just let them get bigger and bigger and bigger. Who knows? But anyway, that's sort of a summary of what this is all about. Now, let us do, I'm going to draw here a quick timeline. Zero, we have negative $4,500. And then at one, a two, a three, a four, and a five. We start out with $800 coming in, we expect. Then the project picks up speed and has a decent little year of $1,200. And then the novelty of it begins to fade away, but it still lasts for a couple of years of $1,000. And then at the end, it's got a $500 final. But don't forget that we have a $300 salvage value we have to add to that. So this total here on the last year, we're going to want to put in $800. Don't forget to do that because I will throw salvage values on. Now that's, by the way, we're doing finance, not accounting. So you might say, well, we're depreciating this to a salvage value of zero. That's great for depreciation for accounting purposes. But we're talking about the real life of the company. At the end of the project, we've got a bunch of stuff. Do we just have it hauled off and thrown away? Or can we sell it? Or can we incorporate parts of it into our new equipment so that we don't have to spend as much on our new equipment? Maybe what I'm talking about there with that $300 is we can pull some of the parts off that stuff. It's no longer good for what we want to do in the future, but we got $300 worth of stuff that we don't have to buy for the next thing, for some other project we're going to be picking up down the road. There you go. Okay, now, open up your calculator, hit the on button. Now, this time we go apps, finance. Now look down there, and you're going to see something called NPV. That's number 7. You can just hit the number 7, or you can toggle down and hit enter. Now when you do that, you want to make sure you're all on the same page. When you do that, what you're going to do is when you hit 7 or hit enter on that NPV, you'll come back to the main screen, and you'll see this. There in your path. And now you just key in the numbers, and you do it this way. The first thing you put in is your discount rate. And you put it in as a percent. Then you put in a comma. Now, at this point, you put in your initial cash outflow, which in this case is negative 4500. Now you put a comma and you open braces. That's second parenthesis. You open braces. And from here, all you do is just honk in the cash flows with commas between them. 800, comma 1200, comma 1000, comma 1000, comma 800. Don't forget the salvage value. Then you close the braces and you close the parentheses and hit enter. And what do you get for your, what do you get? Make sure you get this number because this will save your bacon having to do it the long, hard way. What do you get for a number? Anyone get one? Negative 501. You got it wrong. No. No. What's 501 what? 0.76. You didn't do it right. Let me see what you did. Let me see it. Oh, my. Is there really, is this necessary? You put in. What are you doing wrong?
They got 292.
Did you close your braces?
Yeah.
I don't see it here.
Because it's over
more. Scroll it over. Scroll it over. Let me see what you did.
Man, you spit all on it.
I know, right?
Wipe my window.
No, no. It's actually kind of nutritious.
Look, you got the same thing I did, right? What'd you get?
You put in 6.5%?
Yeah.
Why you got that parentheses around the 6.5%? Did that come in on its own, or did you do that? You should be able to just put in 6.5. Yeah. Yeah.
What was the third method that we're not talking about? What's it called?
It's called derivatives.
Yeah, I'll take the thing out.
Yeah, get those parentheses out of there.
I still got 290. Because when I press enter, it automatically puts them in there.
Oh, I see. Something is really whacked. You used the negative sign for the 4500, right? 800, 12,000. I've never seen one of these Inspires before. I have an older Inspire generation.
Look, he's got the 84.
But he just put in 6.5.
Not 0.065.
Yeah, it's 6.5%.
But I thought the percentage was 0.065.
Not if it's an equation.
No, okay. I'm wondering if all those Inspires, you have to use a decimal. Put it in as 0.065. That's what you get for 290? You put in 6.5, you got 501?
Yeah, I'll do it right now. I was putting in point.
I put in 0.065 and still got 290.
Yep. That's telling me that your calculator is not recognizing the percent.
Yeah, but I don't know why you could put in 6.5. You're talking about 6.5%.
And that's just the way these calculators are. They accept the percentage, just like in the time value of money window. That's right. That's right. Now, how many of you got 501? Did you get 501? Yeah, that's the right answer. There apparently, on those Inspires, And I think it looks like it's taking the percentage and multiplying it. Because, no, what that would mean is that it's making a smaller discount rate than 6.5. That's creepy. That's weird. That's almost weirding me out. Because, let me get back to the main point here. Negative 501. You know what that means? You reject the project. If it comes in negative, you say no. It doesn't matter if it comes in negative $1 or negative $10 billion, you say no. It is negative. And this is the decision making with NPV. You say if it's negative, you reject the project. If it's positive, you say we accept the project. That's the way we say it. We accept this project because it had a positive net present value. Or in this case, we reject this project because it had a negative net present value. And that's where the real funny thing comes, not funny, but you'll have, you look like a marketing genius. You've got this great idea for a new product. You bring it all to the financial people, and we work through the whole thing, and we find out that it has a negative net present value. You come back, so are we going to go with it? No. And, of course, then you're going to start calling me names to begin with mother. And, well, why not? Because it's negative net present value. And you're going to say, I don't even know what that means. This is brilliant. Yes, and a lot of things I write on the internet are brilliant, and I get 2 likes, you know? So it's hardcore, and it's kind of dismisses a lot of the great creativity when it gets to us. We're finance people. We are not creative unless we are really drunk, and then it's just we're creative with how we write in the snow. Anyway. Okay, now I'm going to draw a graph here. Yeah.
So, after 5 years, it technically does take
that. It does. It really does. But at the same time,
I said it was
super questionable. Yeah, no. But you know what? If I was in a company where they had a payback period of 7 years, they'd say, "Yeah, go." And by the net present value, taking into account the time value of money, this is clearly a loser. But in a payback method company that had a long payback period, you know, we're patient. We'll see how it works out. They say, yeah.
It's negative because of the time value.
Yeah, because these monies right here, all this money right here, it accumulates to a nice pile of money, but its value right now, at the same time I'm spending this, it's just not worth it. It's sort of like some... Have any of you seen the television show The Prophet?
Yeah.
Okay. It's one of those shows where some angel investor is looking at companies and, you know, working at seeing if he wants to invest in them. There was an episode just last night. The Prophet, this angel investor, was looking at this kind of real tough case. It was a company that was pulling a decent amount of revenue from a silk screening business, but they had this giant building, so they also had a restaurant in it, they had a basketball court, and they had other things. So the first thing that the investor was bitching about was, you are not focusing on your core competence. The silk screening is where you're winning big revenue. The rest of the stuff is just is basically not coming nearly to the revenue, and it's costing you. And then he started talking about, okay, this building. Then he figured out, these guys didn't want money to keep this business going. All they wanted was enough money to keep the company alive until an option to buy the building came up in 5 years. They had an option to buy the building instead of leasing it for some ridiculous amount. In 5 years, they could buy the building for $2.5 million, and it would be worth $10 million. And he just, At that point, he said, first of all, you deceived me, and you're deceiving your workers. You don't give a rat's ass about this building, about this business. All you two owners are waiting for is to ride it out long enough so that you can buy this building and then flip it and make a fortune and then say the hell with the business. But you see, if he'd been thinking payback method, yeah, 5 years, geez. To flip $2.5 million for $10 million? Yeah, and I'll put in a couple of mil to keep the company going that long. But he didn't think that way. The way he said it was, I don't invest in real estate, and I don't like people who are I don't like people who are misleading me anyway. But what he was really saying was, you know what? Taking this into account at the risk level of what you're doing, pouring money into this, that multi-million-dollar payoff 5-6 years down the road ain't worth me pouring in millions of dollars right now to keep a business going that you're just going to kick to the side of the road with the employees in 5 to 6 years. So he was thinking, these guys are thinking about payback. Oh, if we can only hold on for 6 years, we're going to make a fortune off this. Wow. And he was thinking more in terms of net present value. The risk level of this whole project is very high, which means the discount of the cash flows, even 10 mil in 5 to 6 years, ain't going to be worth that much right now. But let me go on here. Okay, I'm going to do something here, NPV. I'm going to do 100, 100, 200, 200, 300, 300, 400, 400, 500, 500, 600. Okay. Now, look at what I just did here. I did a net present value, and I found that at a discount rate of 6.5%, I have a negative net present value of almost exactly, I bet you everyone else for not using rulers, and then look at what I'm doing here at 6.5%. I have a negative net present value of negative 501. Now I want you, here's a trick. Some of you probably already know this, but some of you don't. We're going to calculate this net present value again. Now, if you want to, you can just rekey the whole thing in, and we're going to use 5%. Just humor me. But you can key the whole thing in, putting a 5% in to the original formula up there, but there's a trick. I want you to do second entry, which is above enter. Second entry. Your formula comes back up again, and now you can go up in the formula and do the same thing again. Except you go up and replace the 6.5 with, use 5% this time. And this time use 5%. And put in this, and everything else just leave the same. And then go back down to the bottom and hit enter, and you'll get the new answer with the new answer. And what do you get? Yeah, about negative 336. Now, in a problem like this, don't sweat the pennies. Okay, don't sweat the pennies. Because, I mean, we're doing expected future cash flows, and you're already in a world of speculation. But at 5% in here, I get negative 336 about. discount rate 5%, I get negative $336. So in other words, at 5%, well, let me use the red marker so that I can do this. At, that was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. At 5%, I at negative 1, 2, 3, 336. About there. Now go back and do it again. Do 4%. And again, it's really easy. Just hit second entry and then go up and replace the 5.0 with 4.0. And 4. What do you get? Negative 219. Let's go hard. Okay, that was 4%. We got negative 219. At 4%, we were up to just a little 4% right there. 219. Right about there. Now, drop down, instead of beating this thing around, try 2%, 2.0%. See what happens at 2.0%. Okay, second entry. 2. Oh, spank me, Jesus. At 2%, we're just slightly positive. And if you did 1%, just one more time, just do 1%. See what happens to 1%. $161. At 1%, it's $161. So at 1%, we're up here. Oops. Well, I'll be darned. As the discount rate drops, well, duh, these cash flows out here become more valuable at the beginning. So we have found that it depends on what interest rate, what your discount rate is, whether a project is a go or a no-go. Two things about this. That tells you you darn well better be good about choosing your interest rate, because it could very well be what determines whether you're a go or a no-go. So don't just take that discount rate that you figure out lightly, because it could make a project that should be rejected one that you accept. Second thing, the big important thing out of this, the place where you cross from positive to negative net present value has a name. It's called the internal rate of return. The IRR. It is the discount rate that makes the net present value equal zero. Again, the internal rate of return is the discount rate that makes the net present value of a project equal zero. Now, if I ask you that as an essay question on exam 2, if you write back what I just told you, you will get perfect credit for it, okay? If you write something else, some new age guru kind of, I feel that it's a place where, you'll lose points. If you go to Investopedia or Wikistupedia and see their definitions, you'll lose points. It's simple. The internal rate of return is the discount rate that makes the net present value of a project equal zero. Dollars, I should say. $0. We're actually calculating dollar value here. Dollar value. So now, let's do something. I can see that IRR is a little above 2%. But if we're going to use the internal rate of return method, we need to know exactly what that internal rate of return is. In other words, at what rate does the net present value of the project equal zero? Exactly. And that's where we go to the second of the formulas that you can use in apps on your calculator. Go apps, finance, and you go down to IRR, which is 8. You either type in 8 or go down there and just hit enter on 8. And it opens up a window, IRR. In this one, you do exactly the same thing you do with the net present value, except you don't put in an interest rate, the discount rate. All you do in this case is key in negative $4,500, comma, open the braces, and you key in your cash flow. 800, comma, 1,200, comma, 1,000, comma, 1,000, comma, 800. Close the braces, close the parentheses, hit enter. Talk to me. What do you get? The internal rate of return here, as we could see sort of roughly from the graph, 2.220%. That is the breaking point between a positive net present value project and a negative net present value project. So, what can we use this for? You got the cash flows all worked out for this, okay? And you found that the net present value is 2.22%, okay? So I am your boss. I say, okay, I gave you that project yesterday. I need you to come back at me within the hour. Is it a go or a no-go? And I want you to use a 4% discount rate. You instantly would say no, because you already figured out that the internal rate of return is 2.22%, so you know that this project is a no-go at anything higher than that. So if I say any number above 2.22%, you can just instantly say no, because it will be negative at that point. That's the power of the internal rate of return approach. It's simply, you can pick whatever discount rate you want, you'll know immediately. If I've got the internal rate of return, whatever I calculate for the discount rate, I instantly know whether it's a no-go or a no-go. There's a complete flip way of using internal rates of return. Internal rates of return are oftentimes used to say what... Okay. The term that's used in businesses, I don't even know if they use it in the book anymore or in textbooks, but it's still very popular in businesses. They have, in companies, they have a hurdle rate. Somewhere in the past, they picked this thing. They'll say, our hurdle rate for projects is, let's say, they say, we've got a hurdle rate of 10%. Every project has to do 10% on us. Okay. What that would mean, and it's kind of like a pull backwards, is that let's say that we had a project that had an internal rate of return of, You worked it out, and the internal rate of return was 12.4%. You know that your company has a hurdle rate of 10% on projects. See if you got the idea. Would we say yes or no to this project? You've been told by the gods on high in the company, hurdle rate 10%. You rapidly calculate an internal rate of return, and your internal rate of return is 12.4%. Is it a go or a no-go? It's a go. Because what you know is that this company, at 10%, there is the hurdle rate. Everything has to meet 10%. But this project's profile, this project's NPV profile, is such that it goes negative. That's what that means. It goes negative at 12.4%. So this project is a go. Because the hurdle rate of 10% means, well, if I know that my project has a 12.4% internal rate of return, at their hurdle rate, this is still a positive NPV project. That's how you see it being used in a lot of companies. It's a combination. Somewhere along the line, they've picked this, we've got to have all projects be at least 10% on the hurdle. And so you just crank out internal rates of return. And in this case, I got this project was 12.4% internal rate of return, so I know that at the hurdle rate, doesn't matter, I don't even have to calculate NPV, I know it's a positive NPV project at the hurdle. See, because it goes down like that. And it's crossing into negative NPV territory way above, 2.4% above the hurdle on this company. So this is a definite yes project. That's where you see hurdle rates being used in combination with internal rates of return quite a bit. The flaw in this method is that where did the 10% come from? I've heard hurdle rates in consulting. When I was a consultant, I think I heard hurdle rates more than I heard any other financial term having to do with project analysis. Well, we have a hurdle on projects of 8%. You ask them, well, where did this 8% come from? Well, that's the way we've always done it. Despite economic times, interest rates going up and down, all that, you've always used 8%. Well, yeah. Is there a problem with that? Huge problem. 8% is coming out of your ass. And it's not even out of yours. It's some fossil that died 20 years ago who set the 8%. But it's the way it's done. Yeah, go ahead. Let's try it again. Yeah. I know. Don't worry. It's okay. So first time I ever thought, I thought, I don't get this. You see.
So the NPV is at 10% is zero?
It's positive. Look at it. Because the internal rate of return of this project is 12.4%. The company has told you you cannot have any project that delivers less than 10%. Okay? But I know that this project is still positive NPV all the way up to 12.4%. It's internal. Now, I might have, see, what could happen? Here, suppose that I have four projects. Project. And IRR. 12.4, 10.6, 9.2. Whoops. Didn't do that right. Just testing. One IRR project. 1, 2, 3. Okay, now it's your turn. Do I take project one?
Yes.
Because it's still positive NPV way above 10%. Well above 10%. 10% is a hurdle. How about project two? Do I take it? Absolutely. Oh, yeah, it's yes or no, up or down, and all that. Yes, no, up, down, drunk, sober. Okay? Or something like that. I don't know. Project three.
No.
Because it went negative at 9.2%. It ain't going to, the hurdle is 10. That thing is negative at 10%. That's how, do you get the idea now? So each project, go, talk. I knew some asshole was going to ask that. Okay, technically the way we say it, in scholarly terms, the company is indifferent to accepting and rejecting this project. It doesn't add to, it doesn't detract from you. I don't know, it's sort of like, okay. How would I say it? Do you eat potato chips below the hurdle rate? Do you eat whole grain granola? It's above the hurdle rate. Okay, do you eat mac and cheese? That's right at the hurdle rate. You eat it, don't eat it, it's not going to change your life. Okay? Now, you listen to One Direction. That's way below the hurdle, way below. You listen to Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. That's way above. You get in the middle and you listen to Usher. That's not going to do anything for you except maybe teach you how to take off your shirt when you're an old man like you did when you were a young man. But it's not going to hurt you either because you know damn well that you're not going to ever be him. Okay? I don't know why. Why the hell do you... Leave me alone. Okay? I'm going to tell you a problem. Internal rate of return. Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead.
So in that graph, we have 2.3% of the internal rate of return.
Yeah.
So if the company says 5% is the hurdle
rate. Dead. Good point. Suppose the hurdle rate on that project over there, your hurdle rate is 5%. You wouldn't even need to do the NPV. Just do an IRR. Find the IRR is 2.22%. This thing has gone negative way before that. I mean, this thing is so negative, it's basically Clint Eastwood at 80 years old. Okay?
I don't understand. Like, what is that 10%? What does that 10% mean? Like,
that's exactly right. That's exactly right. No, you understand it. It's just the number. Yeah, that's, yeah.
So, why would they pick that number? Why would they pick a number like there's a hurdle rate in the first place?
Well, if there's no reason, that's exactly right. It's just the number. Any IRR above that, you say yeah. Any IRR below that, you say no. It's like, you know what your mom used to say? Because I said so. Because I'm the mom. Okay, so this consider this to be the mother, with a U, of all bad decision-making methods. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But if it's between 12.4 and 10%,
that's right, because what would happen then is that your IRR would be down here somewhere, so you'd be negative on it. See, so in other words, this project is here. This project is here, and this project is here. Okay? So that's why you clear out. Okay, I think that's enough for you to get through this. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.